Johnny Ballpark Frank Show on Nashville Sports Radio.
And welcome back, Johnny Ballpark Frank's with you. Don't forget, coming up just after 5, we'll have the opportunity to visit with Ryan Callahan over in Knoxville. He covers the Volunteers with GoVols247.com. Also, Adam Sparks around 5:35. He is the Vanderbilt beat writer for the Tennessean. But right now, chance to visit and get a perspective of this Vanderbilt matchup from an A&M standpoint. Mark Passwaters, publisher with AggieYell.com, part of the Rivals family of websites. Mark, here we are, game week, and finally things kicking off coming up on Saturday.
Hallelujah. It's great to finally get here.
Look, there's been like Auburn, Tennessee, Missouri, a handful of programs inside the SEC, and certainly when you think about it from a standpoint across the country too, programs having their issues with COVID-19. For the most part, how has Jimbo Fisher's group, how have they handled this leading up to this game on Saturday?
They have had zero positive tests since the start of training camp, which I guess is now pushing almost 2 months. So they've done a very good job. They had a handful of cases when everybody came back in early June. But since then, they have actually been very good with avoiding that. I think that is a credit to the players and their self-discipline and staying away from potential problems. I mean, shoot, A&M's a massive campus, you know, with an awful lot of people there, so that makes it even more impressive. And I think it's a credit to the coaching staff for drilling into these guys that they need to be safe and they need to be careful with who they hang out with and all those other things that come with it. So as far as it stands now, with the exception of opt-outs, they should be 100% on Saturday.
You know, that's strange when we hear this, and then what, last week, here's Ed Orgeron with LSU talking about, for the most part, almost everybody on his team at one point or another has tested positive for COVID-19 or been impacted by COVID-19. So we go from that extreme to what you're describing here with Jimbo Fisher's group.
Yeah, I think that there are two trains of thought about this thing. One is that you have to keep your kids, almost isolated. Be very disciplined with, you know, where you go, who you hang out with, you know, do everything largely as a team if at all possible. And I think that's the approach that Jimbo has taken. Orgeron, on the other hand, he may not be overly broken up that his guys have had this disease, which has a 99.997% recovery rate for people under the age of 24. So he might be going for herd immunity. It may be cold or callous to say, but, you know, let's look at it this way. We're going to get into the middle of the season, and LSU's not going to have to worry about having a game postponed because of COVID-19 on their part. Maybe the other guys, but they should be totally healthy. So, you know, it all depends on how you look at it and how you approach it. I think that there can be an argument made either way, but certainly you don't want a bunch of people sick this week.
How is Jimbo Fisher and this squad, how are they approaching this matchup coming up on Saturday with Vanderbilt? Are they looking at it from perspective, look, it's this week's opponent, this is what we're going to have to do, or are they just more or less focused on what they have to do and what they need to execute on offense and defense?
Oh, I think that it's definitely what they have to do. And that is something that he has preached since he got to A&M. Every week isn't about the other guys. It's about what they do and how they execute. And I think that that is even more important this week because Vandy is, you know, banged up, a lot of opt-outs. Obviously, COVID did hit them and has taken an effect. On the other hand, A&M has Alabama next week. So what you need to do is get out there, execute your offense properly, see what you can do with these new guys at receiver and at running back, and then, you know, have the defense go out there, be solid, don't make any mental mistakes, prepare yourself, and see if they can, you know, sort out the odds and ends of their rotation so they have everything ready to go when they go to Tuscaloosa next week.
Let's start with Kellen Mond. Do you think he takes a little personally that he is preseason second team as voted on by the coaches behind Trask as far as down in Florida? Because Kyle Trask, first team preseason by the coaches that just came out last week, and here's Kellen Mond, and you think about what he has brought to the table the past couple of years. Is this one of these things that he can use that as a chip on his shoulder?
Sure, if he wants to. I think that he put a chip on his own shoulder by going back and just reviewing his play from last year. I've said this several times on the site, but Mond is his own biggest critic this year. He has been very harsh in his own personal assessment of his play last year. And if he's gone back and has done what he said, where he's watched every play and figured out what he did wrong, then, you know, if he can adjust and avoid those mistakes, then he will be the first team all-SEC quarterback when it's all said and done. But I think, you know, you and I have discussed this many times, Johnny, telling Mond's biggest adversary is himself. If he goes out there and just, you know, reacts and trusts his talent and his eyes and what he's been taught, he'll be very good. If he sits there and tries to think his way through things, then he will self-destruct. And that, I think, is just the biggest issue for him. There's nobody more talented in the conference than him, and if he just goes out and trusts his instinct, then he'll be fine.
I mean, look, it wasn't like Texas A&M or Kellen Mond, you know, in particular, were awful last year. And if you look at the 8-5 record, three times they played the number one team in the country in Clemson, Alabama, and LSU when they popped up on the schedule. But the bottom line is, just because what happened in 2018, especially that near miss against Clemson, you know, the expectations were so much higher last year. And look, the numbers are decent with what Mond put on the table and what he was able to accumulate during the course of the year. But I think because of the expectations were even higher, it was going to, if without, you know, a double-digit win season, you were not going to be able to live up to that.
Yeah, and I think that the things that loomed large in people's minds last year and to the extent this year were 430 yards against Clemson, who ended up being the national champion, and what he did in the fourth quarter and all those overtimes at LSU, where he was just absolutely outstanding. And that, then he went in against those two very same opponents in 2019, and he was terrible. You know, there's no other way to put it. And honestly, they were an 8-5 team with an 8-5 quarterback. On the other hand, this year they've got a lot more talent. They could be an 8-2 team this year. But it all depends on, you know, Kellen Mond playing to that level. And if he does do that, then I think that he's got the supporting cast around him where they can do special things.
Speaking of special, how special is Isaiah Spiller, the running back for Texas A&M? You know, he's not a household name yet, but just under 1,000 yards rushing last year. He returns for his sophomore campaign. I think he certainly takes a lot of pressure off Kellen Mond, which will then be able to open up the passing game for Mond as well. But Spiller, you know, I loved watching him play last year.
Oh, yeah, and people forget he was just a true freshman. He didn't start the season. Jayshon Corbin did. So he really was thrown into the fire against Clemson and improved significantly as the season went on. He didn't benefit from an offensive line that, you know, like Mond, did not meet expectations last year. And I think that he had some freshman jitters and had to get used to things early on. But he was really the only Aggie that impressed in the LSU game. Everybody else was just awful. But he looked like he belonged on that football field. He was good in the bowl game, even though he was banged up. He had some very nice performances late in the season. And, you know, he's 6'1", 225 pounds, has good speed. I wrote something last night. I said, does anybody really want to tackle him 20 times a game? You know, he's a good size, quality SEC back. And then you take Anaya Smith, who's a speed guy and is a nightmare in space, and he's the changeup. The Aggies have some options at running back that people don't know about yet, but are probably going to figure out pretty quickly.
You know, sometimes teams, especially with returning players, and this, you know, you're talking about Texas A&M, they return a lot of starters, a lot of letter winners, 70-plus letter winners. Was it 17 starters coming back from last year's group? The regular season, now, they did get the bowl win against Oklahoma State, but losing a close game against Georgia and then just not being a part of that game at all against LSU, getting blasted 50-7, did that have any kind of carryover effect? Did that loom at all as far as preparation for this 2020 season?
Oh, I think you'll find 50-7 in the locker room. They won't admit it, but it's there. I mean, how could it not be? If you're sitting there and you beat LSU, you're the last team to beat LSU, and they came looking for revenge last year and wiped you out. Now you have the veteran team. The expectations for your bunch is higher, and they're coming back to your house. Yeah, absolutely, they should be looking for payback, and 50-7 should be something that they're looking at. But I think that they also need to look at what they did against Clemson, how they played against Auburn, and how they played against Alabama, and they ought to know that that level of play, that caliber, is going to lead you back to a fourth place position in the SEC West. And with this level of talent and experience, that's just not good enough. They should be looking for more.
Vanderbilt will be starting a quarterback that has not attempted a pass as far as at a Power 5 conference level. So whoever that starting quarterback is going to be, plus you're talking about an offensive line for Vanderbilt, a lot of depth issues as far as going into this matchup with A&M. Does that certainly, when you hear that, and if you're a Bobby Brown or anybody on defense, you're going to pin your ears back? What's the game plan on defense for Texas A&M?
Oh, they're coming. There's no doubt. They're coming. They have a lot of options up front. This is one of the best defensive lines in the SEC. And again, I don't think people realize that yet. Bobby Brown is a name that a lot of people know. First team All-SEC. But DeMarvin Leal is a sophomore who had a very good second half of last season. He's a former five-star. I think he's going to be a superstar. He's 290 pounds, but he has the speed to play outside, the strength to play inside, so he can be versatile. They have guys that are big, that can rush the passer, but are more of an asset against the run. Then they can rotate some really good speed rushers in and go after people in passing situations. So the biggest thing that A&M has needed the last couple of years is the ability to get after the quarterback without blitzing. And I think that this year, with guys like Tyree Johnson, Jeremiah Martin, Donnell Harris, who's a very talented true freshman out of Miami, they finally have those guys. And I think that Leal, in spite of his size, may well lead the team in sacks. He's just that good. So, yeah, they know that they're going to be facing a beaten-up bunch, inexperienced quarterback, an offensive line that is probably operating with some guys who would be third stringers under normal circumstances. They're going to look to take advantage because, you know, they need to go out there, see what they can do, and then, you know, get that sense of confidence, because obviously the Alabama offensive line in week two is going to be just a titch better.
The four teams that A&M play this year from the East, they get, of course, Vanderbilt Saturday night. They follow that up with Florida week three. They also have matchups later with on the road against South Carolina, against Tennessee. I have to be honest with you, you know, going into this game, knowing how many players that LSU has, you know, they have to replace from last year's national title team, on paper, A&M is the second best team in the West.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that you take a look at Alabama, and they're just flat good. They still have a lot of those guys from last year, in spite of all those first-round draft picks. It's amazing how they do that. And but LSU lost so many players. There are so many questions there. Auburn lost a lot on both lines. Mississippi State and Ole Miss are breaking in new coaches and new schemes with virtually no acclimation time. And A&M's got a bunch of seniors, and they've got guys that have played a lot of football. So, yeah, I think they're the second-best team in the West going in. They may be able to compete with Alabama, but, you know, the first thing they got to do is get over their own obstacles, their self-doubt, things that have plagued this program for years. And if they can do that and they play with confidence and be smart and just let their talent dictate, then they should be good.
Have you been hearing anything other than Vanderbilt this week around the team? I mean, because Alabama's next week, a road trip to Tuscaloosa, is the 100% focus on Vanderbilt Saturday?
Well, let's put it this way. You bring up Alabama, you get politely told to shut up. And I don't think that they have exclusively looked at Vandy, because obviously Alabama is the, you know, more than just the elephant in the room. They are the elephant. But, you know, one thing that Fisher has preached since he got to A&M is you got to take it a week at a time. You cannot overlook anyone. And in spite of the situation Vanderbilt is in, this is the SEC. Those guys are good football players, and if you overlook them, they will bite you. And it may not be a loss, but you don't want to get embarrassed. You don't want to lose confidence in week one. So, yeah, I think that the majority of their focus has been on Vandy. But if they know what the schedule holds. They know who's coming in week two and week three, and they want to get off to a good start.
This will be only the third meeting between Vanderbilt and Texas A&M. All have occurred since A&M joined the league back in 2012. 2013, a meeting in College Station, And then a meeting here in 2015 with Texas A&M winning that one 25-0. So only the third time these two teams have faced off against each other. Saturday night is the place and time in College Station. Hey, do me a favor, leading up to the game, plus throughout the season, let the listeners know again how they can keep up with all your SEC coverage.
Sure. We're at aggieyell.com, like you said. We've got a good deal going on now where if you get an annual subscription, which is basically $4 a month, you get half off and free gear. It doesn't have to be A&M gear. We'll cover virtually everybody, so it won't just be A&M stuff. And I'm also